Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening from whenever and wherever you're listening. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode of Afropolitan Central. I am one of your co-hosts, Omolayo. I am a Nigerian-American currently living in London getting her master's in migration and development.
And I'm Nana, your other co-host. I'm a Ghanaian currently living in London, working in financial services consulting. Together, we're Afropolitan Central, your destination for fresh, exciting, and intellectually stimulating conversation about the African continent and diaspora. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Okay, so today's episode, I think we're intending for it to be a little chit-chatty. We've been looking at the lengths of all the episodes and we're like, lordy.
Is it long? And then we're also wondering if, you know, we should bring in some lighter episodes and everything like that. And this topic isn't too light, but it is, you know, just a little bit.
Yeah, it's personal. And yeah. And I think it's something that we've been talking about a lot offline. So we know and we hope that it will resonate with you guys. And of course, like, let us know. So today, we're going to be talking about, you know, existing in spaces as Black women.
Yes.
And there's going to be different facets of that. Right. And we're excited to get into it. But as is customary with us, before we get into that, we just want to have a little chit chat.
Yeah,
about what's happening in the Afropolitan space. You want to go, Omolayo?
Sure. So for me, Afropolitan space, I think it's just been interesting seeing the conversations happening post LSC summit and then post ADF, because that's my head's been in a hole a little bit, because I'm, you know, finishing up classes and just focusing on writing my papers, and so there's not too much in my
day-to-day.
Yeah, in my day-to-day. And so just every time I come up for air, you know, I'll see friends tweeting about LSC Summit, and, you know, I'm still connected with my ADF group. And so it's just been kind of interesting to see how these different schools, like, approach conversations about the African continent. And I always wonder, you know, just continually, how do we take these conversations in, you know, back home or to the continent? Like, this idea of, like, exactly making decisions. Not because you don't really make any decisions at these conferences. It's just a chance.
Yeah,
to, like, network, have conversations. But I've just been really excited about the kind of conversations that are be going on. And I'm really excited about our generation and our potential.
Hey, there we go. Yeah, that's really exciting. Before I jump onto mine, I want to say that I was really looking forward to attending either conference, but one of them I was on Lisbon, and then the other one I was gonna go through work and it just didn't pan out. Sad day. But my update is probably a little more somber. So you may have seen things on your timeline about Cyclone Ida. I'm never the best with names, but essentially the cyclone that has hit Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and I think a little bit of Malawi. And it's so interesting because by the time that I heard of it, like, it had happened for almost a week. And I'm thinking, what? Like, something of this magnitude or devastation, there hasn't been that much media coverage, and so I've just been that's quite disappointing. But then again, you know, it is what it is. One article that I was reading about yesterday, though, was talking about how essentially the diaspora has been stepping up in terms of trying to support.
Okay.
Of course, there's efforts on the ground and efforts locally to kind of help victims, because I read a story, and I really hope it's not one of those viral fake stories. But I read a story about this really old woman that had been carrying all kinds of stuff, trying to get it to the survivors.
Wow.
And Strive Me, oh gosh, is it Misiwa? So one of the richest men in Zimbabwe, he owns, he owns like a telecommunications company and a whole bunch of businesses. He's really inspirational, but I know his first name is Strive. Essentially was like, wow, he's so touched by her generosity and her kindness, and that he's gonna, like, take care of her. I'm sure he's taking care of the victims as well.
Yeah,
the people. So yeah, obviously there's people on the ground, locals and neighbors that are working hard to try and, you know, help out with relief efforts. But it was also interesting to hear about how, like, fundraising platforms like GoFundMe and others have been also quite instrumental in trying to get aid across. So for instance, there are two or three, I think, students at Skidmore College in the US that did a GoFundMe that's raised, I want to say over 80K,
but I
think so, and are going to go back home and work with local organizations to help. So I think it's interesting in terms of, you know, how we're using technology mm-hmm. to be able to reach those affected back home. And of course, this is also a call to us that, you know, if you have anything, you know, I think even, because I think sometimes what happens for us when we're here, when things happen back home, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so sad. But it's like, how do I actually help? Who are credible organizations to even send funds to?
Right.
So of course, you know, go ahead and do your research.
Exactly.
There's a lot of organizations that are on the ground, local ones as well as international ones.
Right.
So even if you're not comfortable with international ones, there's local ones on the ground.
Yep.
And I think what we also have to bear in mind always is that currency exchange works in our favor.
Mm-hmm.
So even whatever little you can give will translate
could be
to something.
A lot. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's just so amazing to see the way that people in the diaspora have like stepped up, because I think that relates to what I had just been talking about. Like, okay, cool, we have all these conversations and everything, but how do we put them into action? And I think, you know, those kids at Skidmore, like coming together, doing that fundraiser, and then giving it right directly back to the community is exactly how we can leverage these platforms and conversations to create real change.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, do our own bits
instead of just yapping on about stuff. Lordy. So that's it for chit chat.
So moving into today's topic, we've just, you know, you and I have like met up a few times over the past couple weeks, and the conversation that keeps coming up a lot is the interesting, for lack of a better word, experiences we've had in a lot of these spaces, whether it's academia or the workplace or
Absolutely.
The space in between that.
Because it's been the case where, like, you know, I've, you know, spoken to a dear friend, hi Samantha, where she's had some, you know, interesting, you know, maybe potentially sexist experiences at work. And then it's some of those things that leave you to think, is it because I'm a woman?
Yeah.
Is it because I'm the only Black woman as well?
So it's like, which discrimination is this?
is it both? Is it just one?
Yeah.
And then also sometimes feeling like, oh gosh, am I just predisposed to think too much of whatever comes our way? But regardless, you know, she's had her experiences. And the sad thing is that as soon as she talked about her experiences, I was like, oh my goodness, it's happened to me too.
Right.
Funny enough, it happened again today. And then I spoke to you, and it seems like it's a common thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
academia.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I feel like for me, I haven't really had those personal experiences per se. I've been kind of lucky in that way. Whereas I feel like there's definitely been stories around school.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think about, you know, wrapping up in academia and then moving into the, you know, working world, and a lot of the situations that we've been,
I mean, sorry, first of all, can you guys believe that it's almost over? Like, I remember when she moved here, like, it was yesterday.
Yeah. Gosh. it really flew by. It's been really interesting, and I've been really lucky in the experiences that I've had, and the friends that I've made in university and everything, and I've had like an amazing experience. I think particularly because SOAS does like try, and by try I mean like it doesn't go through the entire institution, try to be what it says it is, which is, you know, the School of Oriental and African Studies, and minus the fact that Oriental itself is a bit problematic, and that Africa's barely in there.
Oh, Lordy.
The students who do come there are there because, like, you know, they're trying to make a change. They're trying to change the world. They have a certain worldview about, like, dismantling, you know, patriarchal, capitalist, exploitative systems. And so I do get that from my coursework, from the students that I talk to. But
that's
not
really good.
Yeah, it's been great, but not every student has experienced that even at SOAS.
Oh,
so there's been a lot of students like maybe in the economics department and even the African politics department, and even in a history department that was supposed to be on gender historical perspectives of gender in Africa or something. People have had like traumatic experiences where like the teacher like dismisses what they're saying, the teacher doesn't listen to them, the teacher is just like a very like
rigid view.
Yeah, very Eurocentric view of Africa or any of the topics that they're speaking about. And so students...
That's what you had said about the South African girl, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And feeling quite silenced, even though the topic was about South Africa.
Exactly. So when she lent her own personal experience, the teacher was just like, nope, that doesn't count because, like, this is my view. And he just took his view as, like, law, you know? And so it was just So other students have definitely had those frustrating experiences. And I've had a chance to campaign with other students to like ensure that the A in SOAS isn't forgotten and that they can stop cutting funding to the A in SOAS. So for example, like I take Yoruba right now, but this might be the last year that Yoruba is being taught. And by next year, only, at least for now, as far as the funding goes, Swahili is like the only African language that's going to be taught by next year, which is crazy for a school that has Africa in its title. And then also we were like, okay, we want more Black scholars on the academic reading list, da-da-da. And I know, I don't know if you saw the story that happened at Goldsmiths, but they are also like fighting for similar things because a lot of students have like faced racism and, you know, the curriculum is not reflective of, you know, diverse voices and all these things. And so like Goldsmith students actually had like a sit-in basically where there was like pictures of them like on the balcony and things like that. So we haven't had to go to those extremes yet. And we've had a few sit downs with like senior staff, but you know, nothing's come of it quite yet. Yeah. So yeah, for example, like one of my friends, she's, you know, she's in this, you know, gender class that's supposed to be all about, you know, gender perspectives in Africa and everything like that. And so, of course, there's African women in this room. But this teacher, the way that the class is framed, they're asking questions like per class. And so one of the questions was like, can we speak of African feminism or can we speak for African women? Kind of like who's allowed to say what for whom, like in when you're thinking about like representing. And again, I didn't take this class, so like I might be phrasing the question wrong, but it was something along the lines of, can we speak for African women? And so one of the African women in that class raised their hand and was like, I don't understand this question because I think this question assumes that there's no African women in the room to speak for themselves. That comment just like totally went over the teacher's head, and she was just like, da 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 da, well, this and that, and just being really defensive. And one of the ways that the teacher would be defensive would just be like, oh, well, this isn't my curriculum, like, this is passed to me, and da 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 da. And so I think this idea of like being defensive automatically is also something that's like really frustrating because then it makes it hard to actually have a conversation.
You know what I mean? Yeah, because as I was listening to this, I was like, this could have probably been a really good learning moment. And that's also the thing where sometimes you try to give people the benefit of the doubt that, you know, hopefully you didn't just wake up out of bed and just be like, I'm gonna be prejudiced today. No, like I know for sure that some people's MO, but you know, I think also sometimes I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. But when you're that closed down and that shut down in a situation where you actively have the kind of people or the people that you're talking about in the room, why not learn from that experience to be like, oh, okay.
Let me learn why this question is an issue.
Why is this an issue? Like, how should we be thinking about this instead?
Right.
Or maybe it may even point to a bigger issue that African women are often not in those conversations or in those rooms for a reason, you know, to even be able to dig deeper and say, oh, how could we tackle the systematic, like, you know, if it is systematic, but like, it's like there was room for so much more and it just like fell.
That reminds me of, we had a student staff forum in the development department. So I was saying earlier that my department is like better than, like, quote unquote, better than other departments, but that does not mean my department does not have its problems.
Yeah.
So there's like zero Black or African professors in our department. There's Africanists. not to say that they're not doing a good job. I'm sure they know their ish, whatever. But one of the staff student forums, we were like, hey, like, why are there no Black professors in this department? And then they were just like, they're hard to recruit. Like, you know, all the smart ones are working in the World Bank. Or something like that. Like, that's what they said. And we're like, well, that's not good enough. Like, you need to tell us why. And today I saw a tweet that was like, minorities are hard to recruit is code for our institutional culture is not like conducive to minorities.
Oh my goodness.
So I was just like,
So this is going to take me on a very slight tangent, but bear with me because I think it's relevant. So I saw something on Instagram about, because the page is called like Black Women Tech or Tech Black Women, something of that sort. So the lady that was being interviewed talked about how she had her coding skills. I forgot what language skills they were particularly, and interviewed at Google, and they, no, she either she interviewed at Google or she was already there and she was trying to transition. And they basically were like, we don't think that you're technical enough. And bear in mind, it was basically what the role had asked for. And they're like, oh, we don't think that you're technical enough. We're going to keep you in mind if any sales positions come up. And then for her, she was like, but what do you mean, though? Because these are the skills that are required, and this is what I have.
Right.
So she went on then to, I think, build her app that deals with, like, job recruiting or something of the sort.
Yeah.
Built it herself with her non-technical skills.
Mm-hmm.
And then she talked about the fact that companies like Google and other companies in Silicon Valley like to say that there's a pipeline problem and that there aren't enough Black and minority students that are taking up STEM. Mm. But it seems like when they do show up, though, it's like, oh, you're not technical enough.
Yeah.
So I can definitely draw some parallels, probably.
Definitely. And that story to me reminds me of that whole that question we asked at the beginning, where it's like, was that racism or was that sexism?
Oh, was that sexism? Or is it just both?
Is it both? Because is that his name? Yes, Amir Abdullah, who was a speaker at ADF, okay. And he's the deputy director of the World Food Program. He was talking a lot about, like, how we need more gender parity in the workplace and da-da-da. And he was like, yeah, like, I know exactly the issues that women's, like, not that he knew exactly, but, like, he was, like,
he's aware.
Being like, you know, has been on the director side. He knows that, like, sometimes when people go to hire men, they're just like, like, his qualifications look good enough. We think he could do it. Yeah. But then, like, you'll have a woman with the same qualifications and they're like, I don't know if she's, like, you know, maybe, I don't know, it might be too much for her to handle, you know, like, you know what I mean? Exactly. Oh, and so, like, gosh. And then once, so, like, I said, the guy gets hired and he does a miserable job, they'll be like, oh, you know, like, he tried, like, maybe it was too much for him. And then if a woman, like, you know, of the same qualification does a miserable job, they'll be like, this is why we shouldn't have hired a woman.
In the first one.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So that one is like, okay, is it sexism or is it racism? Like, why didn't they let her transition?
I think it's so interesting because I think that kind of brings me to a few of my experiences at work. Mm-hmm. So obviously I work in a financial services consulting firm and it's white men everywhere. And of course, I'm not trying to say all white men are problematic. Like, I've worked with a lot who have been really, you know, amazing human beings that, like, are absolutely amazing. But I'm not about to all lives matter this. So
moving along.
Yeah. Or, like, when people are like, but it's not all of us or whatever.
Check the ones that it's not.
Check the ones that are not.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of situations where I speak with people and it's like, oh yeah, I had zero idea how to do this job, or, you know, I had zero knowledge of it, but, you know, I campaigned really hard for it, and I spoke to so-and-so, mm-hmm. and then I was just, like, sink or swim, and I figured it out, and these
learned
are...
Learned on the job.
Right? Learned on the job. But one thing that I've realized is, I think it's harder for some of us, mm-hmm. and here's where the double whammy comes in, where you're like, is it because I'm a woman, or is it also because I'm a Black woman,
mm-hmm.
where you're like, I don't know if the same opportunity would have been afforded to me.
Exactly. The grace to, like, learn on the job. The grace
to just learn on the job, mm-hmm. even though, like, and not to say that, you know, I'm sitting at work and just saying, oh my gosh, I'm a Black woman, I'm not going to campaign for myself, or I'm going to let that hold me back, right. quote unquote, whatever that means.
Yeah.
But I think it's just, you know, you're always aware of situations where you're like, would mm-hmm. I get the same benefit of the doubt?
Right.
And also, like, that kind of came 360 for me because I was watching a TED Talk, which I think everybody should watch because it was really good. And I forget, I think it's called, like, How to Get What You Want at Work or something. And the lady's called Carla Harris. And she was, we'll link it in the show notes. She was phenomenal. So she was talking about having a sponsor in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody who's not just a mentor, but somebody that can actively campaign for you and get you opportunities.
Okay.
To essentially sponsor you.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying that it's based on really two things, your performance currency. So being able to set yourself apart and say, I'm doing amazing at this person stands out, like, she kills whatever role. And also the relationship currency that will make people think, yeah, I know her, I like her enough.
She's really sweet. Yeah.
I'll vouch for her. And I realized that for me, a lot of times I have just the performance currency where I'm just like, I'm just putting my head down. I'm going to do a good job. Yeah. I'm going to do, you know.
Do the thing. Because you also know you have to work 10 times harder. So that's one of the reasons to put your head down, right?
To put your head down. But it's like, you won't get far by just putting your head down.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing that I've learned about my company, for instance, and even I've had my senior manager, for instance, said this, and he's a white Irish male. He was like, he's found out that there's different types of people. There's people that are actually doing the work, and there's people that spend a lot of time talking about talking about doing the work as opposed to actually doing the work. But like it or not, you need a balance of both the two to be able to get anywhere.
Because sometimes a lot it's the people who are talking about doing the work that like get the promotion.
That get the promotion.
Because everyone knows them and everyone thinks they work hard.
They're doing a lot of work. But I think that where it then disadvantages, quote unquote, and that's also another thing that we can talk about, how we move forward and how we make sure that we're not being held down because of that. Mm-hmm. Is when it comes to the relationship currency point, like I can see how for like my male colleagues, who most of them are white, it can be very easy for them to have great relationships with that director, with that partner, for them to take them under their wing, because there's a lot of commonalities. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of shared history or shared occupation, shared hobbies.
Yeah, shared experiences. Maybe they like all went to like a similar high school.
Yes, a lot of things where I'm like, wait, what? What is that? Like, I'm not privy to. So I don't know. It's always just very interesting because even within work, there's been a lot of efforts to reduce like the gender pay gap and etc. But I know that it's even more when you add the racial element to it as well. Yeah. And for instance, with my work, it's only recently that I started seeing more black faces, because best believe it did not look like that before. So when you're in that position where you're trying to like, let's say, get sponsors or whatever, I think it can be a bit intimidating sometimes.
Yeah.
Of course, like I said, I've worked with some amazing people who, like, for instance, one of them, like, one of the guys that was, like, some people spend time talking and whatever. I went to him recently and I was like, hey, I think I'm interested potentially in promoting to your team. And he was like, oh my gosh, yeah, you did so great on this project. Like, I would be willing to back you, etc. Yeah. So, obviously, we're not saying that, oh my gosh, it's, like, I don't know.
Impossible. Yeah, it just takes a lot of extra effort.
I think so.
Yeah. And then from like a different landscape, because this is you trying to work in an institution in London that's predominantly white, For me, I'm looking to maybe do research consulting, you know, in the West African scene, you know, so like with African governments, in, you know, organizations that work in West Africa or whatever. And one thing that just like really disheartened me recently was that I'm doing research on human trafficking in West Africa right now. And I saw that the person who wrote the ECOWAS reports for human trafficking was like actually like a white woman who does work in like, I mean, not to say that, whatever.
Not to say that she's not qualified.
Yeah, not to say that she's not qualified, but aren't there like West Africans?
Because that would have been an amazing platform for somebody else.
Yeah, like somebody at a local institution. Like imagine like, you know, somebody from the University of Ghana, like a PhD person at the University of Ghana, like carrying that out. Like, doesn't that make a little bit more sense? Because especially, and the issue isn't that this person was just a white woman. It was just that like, I looked at her profile and she's done work in like Brazil and Asia and So like, it's not as if Africa is her regional focus anyways. Yeah. Like it's not so, but she's the one that's written the ECOWAS reports for the past like 3 years, and they do it like every other year, so the past three times it's been done. And so for me it just like worries me, because I'm like, okay, as someone, as a young black woman trying to work in West Africa, what obstacles am I gonna face? Because especially we already know what people at home are like. They're already like, oh, you this woman, you know? They like even more than here, they dismiss us for our womanhood. So like, yeah, especially absolutely. And then this one will be like age and woman.
And then also, sadly, I think sometimes people back home have the white is right mentality.
Exactly.
So you can come with your qualifications, but it's like, oh, but this white person.
Yeah, but like, oh, like they're white. I mean, we're not trying to generalize, but like, it does happen. We see it because I went to, like someone came to speak at our school and then they were like, oh yeah, my friend gave me a contract and da da da. I'm like, what? Like, that would just like not happen. I don't know. Maybe it happens to other people, but
I think the thing is, sometimes we don't operate with full consciousness. Because I think when you're back home, because to be fair, for me, I had no concept of white supremacy and whatever. Because I was living back home, everybody looked like me. It was like, what's the big deal?
Right.
So I think for people at home, that kind of grand scheme of things, like, you know, how we navigate in this world, just the implications of, you know, the opportunities that, you know, our Western counterparts I'm going on a tangent now. I'm essentially trying to say that sometimes people back home aren't woke enough or see it as a big deal in terms of, you know, treating white people a certain way or putting them on a pedestal or giving them more opportunities. You know, it's just like a, and you think, like, I trust this person somehow. But it's like, but why do you trust this person more?
Because I'm also
to get the job done.
Exactly. Because I'm also thinking about how, like, it will be perceived, because with consulting, right, you tell people, like, this is what you're doing wrong and this is what you do need to do next. And so for them, like, to hear it from a young black woman might feel somehow, do you know what I mean? Like, okay, oh, who are you to tell me this, blah, blah, blah. And so for them, they feel like
an eyelash.
Yeah, when a white person does it, right? Or, you know, especially a white guy does it, because it's like, oh, like, you know, he's neutral, he'll know. Or some I don't know. Something. Or he's like, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting, because when we were having this conversation, we were like, oh, you know, so many things are changing, but so many things are just still the same. And it's funny that you brought this up, because we're like, sometimes even back home, we're not immune from that, are
we? Exactly. That's exactly it.
Oh, gosh.
And then I have another story from South Africa this time, where one of the people, she came to speak at our school, one of the people who was participating in FISMA's fall that was happening in South Africa, which is when they were like, oh, you know, schools are too expensive, you know, so they block people who are, like, lower socioeconomic status. And so therefore, you know, this just creates a lot of, like, institutional problems when, like, the fees are so high. So FISMA's fall. And so it was a really, I don't know, it was a really, I want to say, violent time in South Africa, because, like, the police there were, like, throw tear gas at students, like, all these, like, crazy things. And so anyways, one of the girls, she was saying that, like, her parents were also, like, you know, student activists in the 80s and everything. So her parents, you know, like, supported her, and they were like, oh, yeah, you know, we understand. And she said she had a moment with her dad when they were on campus, like, I think it was at Fix. They were on campus, like, protesting, and the tear gas was throwing. And then, like, the next thing, they were running, and she's, like, running with her dad. And she saw a moment on her dad's face that was probably just, like, wow, like, brought him all the way back to the 80s, being, like, you know, as South Africa even changed.
Oh, my goodness.
And so there was that experience that they had. But then once she graduated and then went into the workforce, I got into a really great, like, firm. I think she did law, so I think it was a law firm. And, like, you know, her parents were so proud of her, like, good job, But, like, you know, similarly, like, the things that she was experiencing in school with, like, institutional racism and, like, she's Muslim, and so, like, you know, Islamophobia and things like that, she was experiencing it in the workplace, and she's like, what the heck, like, I did not just go through tear gas fighting for fees must fall just for me to be, like, here.
Come back
and her parents were like, you know, like, it's gonna be fine, like, we did it, you'll do it, you'll survive. And so she was kind of like, she, because, like, somebody had asked her the question between, you know, the generation in the 80s that was fighting for this stuff and versus the generation now, like, what's the difference? And so for her, she was like, well, our parents, like, for her, she's like, okay, like, I've climbed this wall before, so I can climb it again. And that's what the parents' mindset was when they were going from university to the workplace. So it's like, okay, I've climbed the wall again. So, like, I've,
I can do it again.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And so for her, she felt like, okay, I've climbed this wall before, and now that I'm in the workplace, I don't want to climb their wall.
I'm done.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why you see a lot of people our age, like, starting up our own firms, doing our own things, consulting, like, creating, like, oh, like, you know, tech businesses for black women and because we're just like, we don't want your wall.
I don't want to climb your wall. I think that's such a good point to raise, because I think, you know, a couple of years ago, looking at entrepreneurship and whatnot, because I interned, I remember when I moved to London, at this kind of bakery. They're really good gluten-free treats that are sold at, like, Selfridges, Harrods, all those places. And it is hard work. It is backbreaking work to be a small business owner. So I was over there like, ooh, I know this life is for me. But now, after being in the corporate world, I'm like, how that business looking like?
Because at least it's just you and the work you gotta
do. It's just you. But I think that also kind of brings me to my point, because I was I wonder if I should say this, because I feel like whoever is on there would know. Okay, never mind. I was
not spilling any tea today.
I was in a position where essentially I'll say like a forum of sorts of where a black woman in tech was saying, you know, my company's going public, so I'm going to be in a really good financial position. And, you know, there are a couple of people saying this isn't the norm. So black women who want to go to tech, beware. But it was also kind of like,
why can't you just let her tell her story?
Let her tell her story. But also the thing is, you're not going to be safe regardless of where you go.
True.
You know?
True.
Because even small businesses, now I think about it, there are cases where when it's like product led, for instance, where some companies have had to admit, and this is in the US, so maybe it's different in other spaces, where they've had to act colorless, quote unquote. So just pretend that it's not a black business owner. Like it's not a black business.
Oh, that's so sad.
So something as simple as like, if for instance you have things on eBay or whatever, auction stuff, put a white hand as opposed to a black hand. So you get more offers. And it's just like, oh my gosh, like does it really never end?
Yeah.
So my thing now is also like, you know what? I'm going to face this like wherever I go. Yeah. Obviously, there's going to be some instances that will minimize it. But I don't want to ever be in that position where I have a defeatist attitude. Yes. Like,
well, let me not try because it's not for me.
Because it's not for me. Because then what's going to change?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Nothing's gonna change. We can't leave these spaces for the racists.
No. Absolutely not. And I think it's important for us to, I think sometimes it's uncomfortable because, for instance, my friend that I was talking about, you know, in her case, we think it's probably a more sexist scenario.
Yeah, the racist or the sexist.
The racist.
Not leaving them with anything.
I mean, because it's being perpetuated by another minority. So you think, bruh, like, please, can we not do this? But it's also about how do you deal with it when you do encounter it, though? Because I think it's very easy for us to feel like, oh my gosh, like I don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just going to leave it. But sometimes it's like that conversation needs to be had.
Yeah.
Because if not, nothing changes.
Exactly. So I think it's just a matter of picking your battles. When we had that healing event that I was telling you about, or maybe it was another time, but when we were... when we were talking about what do we do in these spaces, because it kind of feels like you have to choose between protecting yourself and protecting your community. Because somebody will say something like offhand, like quasi-racist or like, you know, but those microaggressions, and you're like, do I say something
or do I not?
And you're always like kind of battling, because like to say something would mean like maybe an opportunity for them to learn, but maybe not.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe. But at least you said your piece and they know it's not okay. Or, but staying silent also means, like, you get to just continue with your day and maintain your peace for, like, a couple more hours.
I think that's a thing. And I think this is what the issue with being, like, too woke for your own good sometimes comes in.
Yeah.
Because I think, like... because I remember at the time of Kaepernick's protests and whatnot, there were people that were like, I'm not going to my job and coming here to kneel, like, in solidarity with him because this is my job.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I have to think about my actual livelihood and whether I want to leave certain things at the door, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, for me, I've gotten to that stage where, like, for better or for worse, I just operate in certain ways at times where I almost just assume that somebody could potentially act a certain way towards me, so that when it does happen, I'm not taken by surprise.
So the shock is less.
Okay. But I don't also think that that's the healthiest way to go about things. But I think that for me, as I've grown older, I've gone to that position where having low expectations has helped me, you know, when it relates to that. And I've also gotten into a position where if I feel like I have the mental capacity to make a case, like, I will make it.
Yeah.
And if I'm, you know, I feel like I don't have the mental capacity for my own mental health and well-being for that particular day and time, to just be like, I'll let it slide for today.
Walking away right
but
now.
I'm walking away in this instance, but next time I'll say something. Because I think it's also important for us to know that we don't always have to carry the whole weight of the community on our shoulders.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's the important thing too, like realizing that you have to think about what position you have at that moment. So, for example, the colleague you were saying that was like, I can't come to work and be over here kneeling in solidarity. And then he shouldn't feel like obligated to do so. Like, Kaepernick was in a very privileged position. He had a platform that he could use to make such a statement. And so, I mean, homeboy lost his job. So, like, that was a consequence he knew that he could afford, he could take on. Do you know what I mean? So that doesn't mean that other, you know, Joe Smo over here can do the same thing. Do the same, absolutely. And then especially,
but it doesn't make you less woke or
exactly, or know? Like less down for the cause, absolutely. Or like less protective of your people. Because like sometimes just by you like occupying that space and being able yes. to like stay in that job, you're already doing so much for your people and your community. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. another thing to consider too is like, okay, like yes, also like the dynamic between you and the person that said the problematic thing, right? Because if it's a coworker, like, okay, yeah, like let's have a conversation. Yes. But if it's your boss,
oh my god. Speaking of which, I've had a boss where anytime I bring up Ghana, he's like, is it like Malawi? Is it like Malawi?
Because he's been to Malawi, right?
He hasn't even been Malawi, but he's heard the safaris there are cheaper. And I'm just like, haven't been to Malawi. I'd love to go to Malawi to find out the similarities, but I don't know Malawi.
And it's so funny.
Obviously, because it's a boss, it's always like, oh, haha. No,
that's one of those ones where you're like, I know this is harmless, but like it's still annoying.
But it's so annoying.
Like, I know this is coming from a good place and you're trying to have a conversation, but it's still annoying.
Because for me, the first time it happened, I was like, why is your only point of reference safaris though?
Yeah.
You know? And now I'm just
also
like,
okay. Malawi wasn't the first place I would think of for safaris.
Because his point is that he's heard that safaris, they are much cheaper.
Oh, okay.
Compared to other countries.
Okay, got it.
Hence, because then the second time he was like, is it quite developed? Are there like cities there and stuff? And I was like, gosh.
Oh, no, that's not harmless. That's bad.
That's bad. But once again, because of the dynamic with that
right.
person, I can't
how much
just
can
be
you say?
Up like, oh my gosh.
Can you Google it?
Can you Google it? You're so ignorant. I don't have time for you. Yeah. So I just have to like giggle a bit and be like, tisk, you know? So
that's so awkward. Yeah. I hate being in positions like that. I feel so weird
because a lot of times I come out of it and I'm just like, oh man, did I do enough?
Exactly. And I feel like, and even when I do like the, you know, like haha thing, I feel kind of like weird after because I'm like, oh, do they now think it's okay? Like, are they gonna tell the next black person they see the same stupid comment? Da 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 da. So I just feel a lot of guilt. But like I was just saying, I should take my own advice.
Yeah,
don't feel like you have to like, you know,
carry
shoulder everything and yep. allow yourself some grace.
Yep, allow yourself some grace. Absolutely, because there are gonna be situations that are gonna be perfect learnable. Perfect learning, teachable moments.
Yeah.
They're going to be somewhere, you know, this person has no interest in learning anything.
Yes.
Just to walk away as well.
Exactly.
So I think you win some, you lose some.
Exactly.
We need to put our well-being, our emotional well-being and our sanity first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we also have to make sure that we're operating from a place where we're not like, well, I don't really belong in this space or, you know, like operate from a defeatist point of view.
No. We won't
never,
do that. Because even me, like I'm still planning on applying for research consultancy jobs in West Africa. I'm going to get that money.
Absolutely.
I did not get all this education
for that.
For nothing,
because
yeah.
The thing is that it's important for us to be in those situations.
Exactly.
And like, for instance, you have the example of remittances, didn't you?
Yeah.
With the girl's assumption. Yeah, no, okay, we will share this another time. But yeah, I think, you know, in conclusion, I think there's undoubtedly gonna be moments where we're like, is this because I'm a woman?
Yeah.
Is this because I'm black? Sometimes it's gonna be both.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, we shouldn't let it get us too down.
Yeah.
I think we absolutely need to speak up when we think, you know, I'm okay to speak up. Like,
yeah.
this is enough is enough. You know, not speaking up is going to harm my mental health.
Yeah.
Not speaking up is going to endanger my well-being.
Yeah.
Let's absolutely do it.
Yes.
Like, and just pull through on that.
Exactly.
And in times where we feel like, yeah, the cost-benefit analysis is just not
it's not either.
We'll leave it for another time.
But what we won't do is like take ourselves out of the running. We'll apply for those positions,
absolutely.
Apply for those, you know, promotions. Because if we don't, people are going to be making assumptions without our presence. And so that's super important for us to like take up these spaces and, you know, do the work.
Do the work. Absolutely. So I think that brings us to the end. But I think for this particular episode, let us know what your experiences have been. Like, can you identify? Has it been the complete opposite for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you enjoyed certain privileges being the only woman or black woman in the space? You know, if there's some benefits to be enjoyed, please let us know.
Let us know
so we can leverage it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is it from us, you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in to another conversation on Afropolitan Central. But of course, we don't want it to end here. Please, we're eager to hear your thoughts and your insight.
And you can leave those thoughts and insights on anywhere you listen to your podcast. And of course, on social media, everywhere as Afropolitan Central. Those links will be below. And if this conversation really resonated with you, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and of course, share with a friend.